I'm Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KVCR. Thanks for listening. Today on the show, I'll speak with Jeremy Jones, who is the program manager for Paint Care California. He'll share how you can turn in your old paint, clean out your garage, and recycle all at the same time. Then I'll speak with San Bernardino Valley College faculty member Brandy Nelson, who'll share details about a project called One Paycheck Away. We'll learn why the program may be helpful to educators, social workers, students, and you and I. It's coming up on Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez, right after the news. Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. My guest is Jeremy Jones. He's the West Coast Program Manager for Paint Care California. As summertime approaches, maybe some of you are thinking about cleaning out your garage as one of your summer projects. So what is Paint Care California?
Paint Care California is a program which actually leverages existing programs in San Bernardino and Riverside counties to help people get rid of hazardous waste. And specifically for our program, to help get rid of paint waste, which is the number one material that people have in their house that they can't actually put in the garbage.
Tell me how it works.
For a lot of people, it's simply is your nearest paint store. Present your paint at the desk of the paint store or the facility, and they take it for you at no charge, basically no questions asked. Even if it's dry, as long as the can's not empty, you're able to bring your paint. And most of these locations are open 6, if not 7 days a week if they're a retail store.
There is no fee, so can you just share some of the drop-off areas here in the Inland Empire?
Sure. Well, you know, just for example, in the area surrounding San Bernardino, there are Sherwin-Williams stores, two of them in San Bernardino. There's actually San Bernardino County government facilities, such as the Redlands City Yard. SB County operates a facility that's open Monday through Friday at the International Airport in San Bernardino. And then if you go further south, you can find a number of sites down in Riverside, Corona, such as Vista Paint, Sherwin-Williams, Dunn Edwards. The best way to express this is to have people check out our site locator on the web, paintcare.org. It's as simple as putting in your zip code.
Let's say I live in San Bernardino, but Redlands is closer to where I work. Do you have to show an ID as to where you live? Are you able to drop off at any location? Does it matter?
For retail stores, you don't need to show any identification, no ID. Someone could walk in from San Francisco if they wanted to and bring paint to that material if they had some friends or family they were helping out down here. The county facilities, they do times require to show county identification.
Is it just paint that's dropped off at these centers, or is there other things that are dropped off?
Yeah, so in the retail stores, they're not really able to have the gamut of hazardous waste that they can handle at, say, the county's facilities. But we do have a list of products. Again, you can find that on our website, but I'll summarize it briefly by saying it's anything that you would paint that you would put in your home, interior paints, exterior paints, oil-based as well as latex paints. But also it includes things that are not thought of typically as paint, such as stains, deck coatings, primers, sealers, undercoaters. Only thing we really don't want to see at the sites are aerosol cans. That's one of the number one things that people bring. We don't want to see them because of the combustion hazard, and paint thinners and mineral spirits. Those are chemicals. Those aren't paints. Those go to the government facilities.
Okay, very good. How is the program funded?
So the program is funded by a small fee on each can of paint that is sold in the state of California. And so for a typical, so the gallon is the most common size of paint purchased, that's 75 cents. However, if you're buying in 5 gallon buckets, it's $1.60. So there's a bit of a benefit there for people who are, say, contractors that buy larger quantities of paints. And then that money goes directly to our nonprofit for the sole purpose of managing the paint that people bring into the various locations. It also goes to support the government programs who bring their paint in through our program as well.
And why do we feel a program like this is necessary? What is your mission and goal?
There's really two key elements of it that are most important to know. The first is that paint is a tremendously hard material to manage and very expensive. So previous to this program, the cost of the material to be recovered and processed was being borne actually by taxpayers through the government facilities. So this takes the burden off of them and puts it on people who are actually buying and using paint when they purchase the paint versus people who may never have bought a gallon of paint in their life but still would be funding their their local government waste facilities. So that's the key point. But the bigger picture from the environmental perspective is we want to recycle the paint. Recycling the paint is really important because when you make a new gallon of paint, it's very resource intensive. It uses a lot of virgin materials that have to be mined out of the ground. When you recycle paint, you don't need to get any of those. They're actually processed locally. There's actually a recycler right there in Riverside that gets a lot of the paint that comes into the program. And so it's actually helping local industry to help recycle the paint locally. It's not something we can say everywhere in California or even nationwide, but this is actually the heart of paint recycling country right there in your listening area.
Well, that's interesting. How is it recycled? I'm seeing it being poured in, but not all paint comes in. It comes in hard and old and dry. How is it recycled?
Well, it's still a very manual process.
Okay.
And that's also why it's kind of expensive to do. But cans need to get emptied and then sorted and separated based on color. But actually, a lot of the paint that's brought in fact, about 65% of it, is actually able to be turned into new paint. It's really quite good that the weather is accommodating in Southern California. As long as the paint's stored properly, it's going to be pretty good if people bring it in a timely basis. Yeah, we do get junk paint, that's no question, but that's only about 30% of the paint. And so as long as there's a market for it, people will buy it. And the colors are right, it can be turned into good paint and sold in the marketplace, less than new paint.
I'm speaking with Jeremy Jones. He's the West Coast Program Manager for Paint Care California. So I have paint left over. It's still fairly good. I take it to you. Do you recycle it in that you just sell that color to somebody else, or do you pour it into something and it's mixed? Or so when you say recycle, meaning somebody else can go to this location and buy my old paint?
There's a couple of ways you can do it. You can either reuse the paint. That's not recycling. You can reuse it. If you present it to us for recycling, it will go to a company that will actually empty the cans of the paint and sort of combine them all together by color and sort of batch them up and make pallets of paint that they can ship out. And many times they can put them in large vats and send them out to anyone who really needs a large quantity of paint in an array of colors.
Wow, very interesting. I didn't know that happened. So how do businesses become a partner, become one of your drop-off locations, or what's the process for businesses to become a partner with you?
I'm glad you asked, because we really would love to see more locations in the Inland Empire. We're actively seeking and recruiting anyone who does sell paint, has that as part of their business, nonprofits as well, such as Habitat for Humanity. They can certainly reach out to us either via our website, paintcare.org. It's a very simple process. They basically notify us that they're interested. There's a small contracting process where we just sort of make sure that everybody knows what we're supposed to be doing. And then we train them. And within a couple of weeks, we can have people up and running and promoted on our website and collecting paint from the public. But again, it has to be folks who are sort of in commerce, typically paint stores, typically folks that are maybe in independent hardware stores are an ideal candidate for our program.
As a business, do they need to qualify in any other way or just be a paint company? Are there other companies that could participate?
If I look across the landscape of who's in our program, it really tends to be paint stores.
Makes sense.
Hardware stores and lumber yards, I guess, would be another sort of out there. I wouldn't say like a greeting card store wouldn't be an ideal, no offense to greeting card stores, but that wouldn't be an ideal place. It really tends to be those folks who do it. I guess, technically speaking, I don't see a reason why other locations couldn't, but it's just more of a fit, shall we say, for people to know to come to that location. It's typically where they buy the material.
So let's say the company has the paint. Does your company come and pick it up and take it to wherever it needs to be recycled or reused or repurposed?
So say, for example, a Bickel Sherwin-Williams or Vista Paint or one of those paint retailers.
Sure.
They have boxes on site provided by us and paid for by us, and then they either are on a scheduled pickup or they call in for a pickup. And there's also an interesting thing for folks who either have accumulated paint over time in a large quantity. They don't actually need to go to a store or go to a county facility. They can actually give us a call if they've got minimum of 200 gallons of paint, and we'll pick it up directly from them.
Wow.
And then that's a really important service. That is, again, free of charge. All we're really asking is folks catalog the paint, have a good quantity so we know how big of a truck to bring, how many boxes to bring, help the hauler when it's time to pick it up. Beyond that, the service is free and on-site service.
Okay. And then lastly, when you're describing this box, so the business must have some area designated and they need to have a little bit of space so they can accommodate those boxes. I'm just thinking, if businesses are listening and they said, oh, I could never do it, I don't have enough space, what kind of space are we talking about if someone were interested?
Yeah, absolutely. The ideal space is usually to fit about two boxes that are about the size of a standard wooden pallet that you'd find in a warehouse. It's about 3 feet by 3 feet. Plan on two of those spaces plus some space to walk around and give access. And also that the boxes need to be stored indoors, and that can be a challenge as well. With
definitely some parameters going on to be able to house the space. And then how often is it picked up?
As often as the site needs. If they were to fill up, I mean, most sites are picked up either weekly or biweekly.
Got it.
But we do have some sites that are picked up a couple times a week if they fill up those two boxes or more. Some stores have 5, 6, 7, 8 boxes to accommodate larger quantities. Another key thing I would want to say is that if the reason why paint stores and hardware stores tend to be the ones that are part of the program, in California, boxes need to be picked up on a certain basis, so they cannot sit there sort of empty for periods of time, say.
And how many locations, just ballpark, in the Inland Empire region do you think?
That's a good and big question. I would have to, let me just do a quick search here. You know, I think in San Bernardino County alone, I think we're looking at about 30 or 40. And Riverside County also has about 30 or so as well. So closer to about 100 between Riverside and San Bernardino counties. And that goes all the way, of course, to the Arizona-Nevada border.
Sure, it's a wide area. But that's good. There, at least there's opportunities and locations. And again, where can our listeners go for more information?
Definitely the number one question we get asked is, where can I find this site? And that's paintcare.org, and a great place to learn about our program.
Great. So if people are cleaning out that garage, this is a great opportunity to get rid of paint that you know you're not going to use, right?
Absolutely. And the sooner we can get it, the sooner it can be turned into new paint. And I guess that's really one of the big messages to get out there is don't let it sit. I mean, we know it's always maybe next year's a better time, but right now is the best time to do it.
Great. Thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate your time and sharing more about Paint Care California.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks for your support of the program.
To learn more about Paint Care California, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. Click on today's show for a link to their website. After the break, I'll speak with Brandy Nelson about the One Paycheck Away program. You're listening to Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. One Paycheck Away program with Catholic Charities creates role-playing scenarios of what it's like to live in poverty. Many are unaware of what life is like not to have a steady income, or where one paycheck could be the difference between making a rent payment or being homeless. Brandy Nelson, faculty instructor in human services at San Bernardino Valley College, shares how the One Paycheck Away program works by staging eye-opening simulations.
Well, One Paycheck Away, the original name is Poverty Simulation. It is something that Catholic Charities has been doing for years to give people the opportunity to experience what it's like to live a month in poverty. So every 15 minutes is a week in poverty. When we met to discuss having this on campus, it's a collaborative effort between different departments and faculty and staff. There was some conversation about the word poverty and it possibly setting off triggers and things like that.
Sure.
So then that was another conversation to why it's important to have an event like this. And the One Paycheck Away actually came from Professor Anthony Blackshear in sociology, because there are so many people that don't necessarily see themselves living in poverty or may not truly be under the federal guidelines or state guidelines, but that one paycheck will make the difference and they could be in poverty. So Catholic Charities agreed with that name. They thought it was good. And so we've just changed the name to, the One Paycheck Away. So what we're hoping to bring is an awareness of poverty. Also for those that may be living in poverty, to realize that others are aware and are interested in learning what they can do to help fight poverty and to help support them. And for those that maybe don't know as much about it, to get a broader definition of what poverty is.
So when you think about it, who do you see at the tables with you? Who are you hoping to see? Perhaps if our listeners are hearing this and saying, that might be good for someone to hear. So who are you trying to get to the table there?
We want to reach students, faculty, and we want to reach staff. Collectively, the campus, so campus-wide, by Catholic Charities was if simulation, because initially when you have it, Catholic Charities provides the kit and you pay a fee to have the kit. Usually when colleges do have their first simulation, then the campus decides to purchase the kit. At that point, the simulations can be more frequent and they can have a broader attendee base.
So explain to me what a kit is and simulation is.
So actually what the kit contains different signs for different social service agencies. The kit will have different businesses that you would see in certain communities, such as a pawn shop, Payday Advance. It'll have the social service agencies. It'll also have a school and the kits that represent these different businesses and organizations. The simulation will actually be the going through whatever scenario you're given. So once people register, those names will be attached to a role. And when they check in that day, they'll be given a sheet of paper to let them know what role they're playing, what their family unit consists of, if they're going to be a grandmother on a fixed income, maybe raising a grandchild, if you're going to be an unemployed wife. When I did the simulation previously, some years back, I was an unemployed husband, and in our family unit, we had a wife, there was a teenage child and a younger child. And so you're provided how much money your family makes, if you have a car, what your living expenses are. And so you're literally going through every 15 minutes living for that week, paying whatever bills you can pay, problem solving, navigating, utilizing whatever systems that you need to be able to successfully maintain your household.
So it sounds to me, having never attended one of these, that perhaps it's more like a play and you're giving roles and then you're kind of having dialogue with this or the experience of what it's like to be in those shoes. Is that right?
That is. It truly is a role play, and you are living that experience. And then at the end of the hour, there is a debrief. And so then you debrief the process, the experience, and what that felt like.
I'm speaking with Brandy Nelson. She's faculty on the campus of San Bernardino Valley College in Human Services. And why is this important to participate in something like this?
Being in the city of San Bernardino, where we do have high rates of poverty, and so we have students that are affected, and we even have adjunct staff that can be affected. And so it really brings that awareness and how we can look at things in a different perspective to make sure that everything we're doing is accessible to all students, which Valley has a very broad sense of diversity and in making sure we're including all of our students. And so students in poverty would be one. Just being mindful of that and how we make things accessible for those students.
So now I see it as a sensitivity awareness that some of us that may be doing okay and aren't living paycheck to paycheck can now almost understand or have some empathy what a student or a fellow faculty or someone else might be going through. Would that be fair to say?
Yes, that's exactly what we're looking to do. Enlighten, bring awareness. I think that will help how we continue to serve our students and how we continue to interact with our colleagues and our students.
And do you know if other colleges, campuses do something like this?
Yes, I know that Cal State San Bernardino has done it. La Sierra University, I attended at University of Redlands, and I was told that a couple of the campuses that had done it ended up purchasing the kits because they had a commitment to every year holding a simulation. And so that's been something that we've discussed is, as a campus, you know, after seeing what the simulation is like, if that's something we would like to do, because there's still a lot of faculty, staff, and students that would like to participate.
And what does it mean if the campus buys the kit?
So if the campus purchases a kit, that means that we can set it up however often we like. So if one particular department wants to use it, if sociology decides they'd like to use it, it's been suggested we use it for professional development. So then we would have it and we can set it up however often. We could target whatever particular group, or we could have it campus-wide.
Would it be allowed to be used in the classroom each semester?
So if a particular sociology class was going to do it, they would probably need to do it with multiple classes to have the numbers to be able to facilitate it correctly.
You said you participated in something like this at the University of Redlands?
Yes.
What did you gain from the simulation?
What I gained from the simulation, actually being the father in the simulation, not working, the wife worked. So it was my responsibility during that simulation to go and pay all the bills. We did not have enough money to match the bills that needed to be paid. So it was a lot of deciding what would be paid, what wouldn't. We didn't have a car in that simulation, and you were given a certain amount of bus passes and you can purchase more, but based on the money that we had, I couldn't really purchase more. So there was a certain amount of stress that came along with trying to navigate the different systems, trying to go to the pawn shop and do these things to make these bills. Well, once I completed the first week, I was so happy and accomplished, but then it was week two and I had to start all over again. One of the things I think that really stood out was during the simulation, the person that played the teenage daughter, someone had dropped either money or a bus ticket. I forget which one it was. And she saw the person drop it and she picked it up, but she didn't give it to them. She gave it to me because the family needed it. When we did the debriefing, the person that played that role said, "I felt helpless. I saw my parents struggling. And I was a teenager and I couldn't do anything." So when she saw that bus pass or that money, that was her opportunity to help the family. So I share that with my students in human services, because even though what she did would be considered as stealing and it wasn't a moral choice, but when you look at the context and why she took it and how she contributed to the family, it made a difference on looking at why people do what they do.
Wow, that's really powerful. That's really cool. So afterwards, you do have a debriefing with your other fellow participants and kind of discuss the whole thing.
Yes. And what we will have counselors from the health center that will be there during the debriefing. You know, it stirs up any type of feelings for anyone. So we will have them there just in case to assist those participants.
Faculty instructor Brandy Nelson hosted a One Paycheck Away simulation on the campus of San Bernardino Valley College. That's our show. Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including David Fleming, Sharina Wad, Sean Houlihan, Roger Ashheim, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Our theme music is by Ethan Bortnick. If you'd like to hear any of my past interviews, go to our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on the interview you'd like to hear. While you're there, leave me a message or share an idea for an upcoming segment for Lifestyles. Thanks for listening. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now.